Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Well, welcome again to Circles of Change here, and we're broadcasting live from the Tucson Festival of Books in Tucson, Arizona. And it's a pleasure to have one of University of Arizona's own, Professor Tom Sheridan, here with us. How are you today, Tom?
Good, Zara. Nice to be here.
It's a real pleasure. Let me introduce Tom. He's a research anthropologist and professor at the U of A and written or co-edited 12 books and monographs, including Arizona, A History, the revised edition, which is actually debuting today at the Festival of Books in exciting format, and his book, Landscapes of Fraud, Mission to Makakori, the Baca Float, and the Betrayal of the Tohono O'odham, won the past President's Gold Award for the Association of Borderland Studies. In addition to teaching courses in evolutionary and ecological anthropology, Southwest land, culture, and society, and conservation and community, Tom serves on the board of the Alter Valley Conservation Alliance. Alter Valley is a not-for-profit organization of ranchers dedicated to the conservation of open space, biodiversity, and working ranches in the Alter Valley southwest of Tucson. He's also involved with the Canoa Ranch Foundation, Pima County Sonoran Desert Conservation Plan, and the County's Conservation Acquisition and Science Commission. Tom's current research projects include A History of the Hopi Indians and the Spaniards and Stitching the West Back Together, a collaborative conservation and working landscapes in the American West, funded in part by the U.S. Forest Service and the National Park Service. So, Tom, I think that's a pretty compelling title of a segment, and indeed that your next upcoming book, Stitching the West Back Together. What do you mean by that?
Well, if you look at a land tenure map of the West, you'll see that it's crisscrossed with all of these jurisdictions. You know, unlike back east, where almost all the land is private land, in the West, both the federal government and the states have an enormous amount of the rural West. And so typically, most of that land is in ranching, but a ranch may consist of a small amount of private land and then grazing allotments that may be on Forest Service land, Bureau of Land Management land, or on state trust land.
Exactly. And in fact, of course, we just hosted Bob Sharp in his new book that focuses on the eight valleys in southern Arizona. But that indeed creates some considerable complications, doesn't it, when you have private, state, and federal hands all in the cookie jar?
It certainly does, you know. And so for a rancher, they run their ranch as an economic unit, as a single unit. And if they go to a bank to get a loan, the entire ranch is you know, put up as collateral. But in addition to dealing with them and their families, they have to deal with the Forest Service, the BLM, the State Land Department, and all of the other interest groups that want to have a say in how so-called public lands are managed in the American West.
Well, in particular, if those lands are then very attractive for development and urban sprawl, or even more rural sprawl, it comes to be a challenge, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And if you look at the value of ranches near major urban centers like Tucson or Phoenix, anywhere from 50 to 80% of the value of that ranch is not as a ranch. Mm-hmm. It's the development value of the private land. And so ranchers are under a tremendous amount of pressure from speculators, from developers, to sell out.
You know, and isn't another dynamic that plays out is if many of these ranchers, which I believe they are here in Arizona, have been in a family for multiple generations, that as they go from generation to generation, there can be more and more family members that are involved, or perhaps family members that no longer show an interest, so that you might come to that point in the evolution of that property where who knows really who wants to continue in that fashion.
That is an enormous problem, and especially since, you know, the kind of the median age of ranchers is over 60 now. So where is the next generation going to come from? And many ranchers face huge estate
taxes,
problems.
Right.
Estate taxes, multiple heirs, some of whom may not want to, you know, may not want to continue ranching. So it can be extremely difficult for the kids who do want to keep on ranching to be able to do so.
And, you know, that's certainly, of course, we're the benefit of all the wonderful movies of the Wild West, right, and the romance of it all. But that's one tough career, isn't it?
It is a tough career, and it's gotten tougher because, you know, a generation ago, ranchers were heroes because, mm-hmm. you know, the nation was in love with cowboys. But with the rise of the environmental movement, unfortunately, some environmental groups have targeted grazing on public lands. And in the process, they've demonized ranchers. So the last 20 years have been politically very, very contentious in the rural West. And there's been a tremendous amount of polarization where you have ranchers on the one side and environmentalists on the other. And I've spent the last 15 years of my career trying to figure out how to bring them back together.
And one can imagine then that's why the youth of today, if they're sitting there faced with and watching some of that strife, when they see so much other strife in other parts of the world and other dynamics, they say, why do I want to be part of that?
They
that
do.
That takes a different cut of a person to want to be able to persevere.
Yeah, no, it's difficult. But on the other hand, you know, a lot of people are very attracted to the agrarian lifestyle. And unfortunately, ranching is a very expensive business to get into. You know, they say it's kind of the womb, the tomb, or the altar. Mm-hmm. You know, either you have to be born into a ranching family, you have to marry into a ranching family, or otherwise it's very difficult to get into it. I only know of one rancher, an amazing couple, Dennis and Deborah Moroney, who actually have created a career for themselves as ranchers without being born into it.
Yeah. Well, the one thing Bob mentioned, of course, in the segment right to earlier in the show is the idea, though, that really ranchers, those that are so committed to their field, their focus is on making the land better than when they found it, so to speak. In other words, enhancing it through their natural ways of how their animals will graze or how they will choose different feed, different grasses to plant, and so on. So this isn't a matter of stopping depleting the land, because most ranchers are really of taking into places it wouldn't ordinarily have gone, in a positive sense.
Right. You know, there was tremendous overgrazing in the West a century ago, primarily because it was all open range, all public domain, and there was no way to regulate the number of animals that were on the range. But for the last 100 years, ranching has been this long process of figuring out how to ranch sustainably. And that's not to say that all ranchers do that, but many do. And it really is one of the few extractive industries in the West that has the possibility of being truly sustainable.
You called it an extractive industry?
Well, an industry where, you know, you're extracting a natural resource,
yeah,
like mining,
right,
like agriculture, mm-hmm, like ranching. But, you know, Pima County and its Sonora Desert Conservation Plan identified ranch conservation as one of its 6 major goals, because the reason why we still have open spaces left in the West is because we've had working ranches on those landscapes. And so the county figures that it's cheaper and better to keep those ranches as cattle outfits, because they're, you know, any environmental group will tell you there is not enough money in the world to buy all the land that needs to be conserved.
Right. And otherwise it would be too easily be developed because of beautiful vistas and access to natural,
right,
resources and so on. Now, here in Arizona, of course, you are really an expert beyond Arizona, of course, the whole view of the Western template. But is not water one of the biggest catches in this whole game, shall we say?
Actually, ranching utilizes very little water,
okay,
you know, much less than agriculture and less than residential or so, you know, ranching is you know, one of the few industries that I think will probably survive if we let it. But, you know, to kind of get back to conservation for a minute, our primary model in this country has been the protected area national park model, where we take land out of the economy, right, you know, put a boundary around it, and try and protect it. And that's all fine and good, but again, we'll never be able to do that to all the land that needs to be open in order for all the different plants and animals in the West to thrive.
Yes.
So that's why a lot of us think that carrying conservation out on working working landscapes is so vitally important, and why we think that ranchers and environmentalists should be, they're not always, they should be natural allies. Mm-hmm. And ranchers are, the good ranchers, the one who are committed to it for the long haul, are really striving to do it in a sustainable fashion. You know, they want to grow more grass, and they realize that they, if they hammer the land, they, you know, the number of their animals that they'll be able to raise.
It's like overfishing the oceans.
Exactly.
It's going to show up and cause a ripple effect across the entire circle of life. It isn't just that one species of fish or one type of cattle or one type of horse.
The other critical thing, and this is something that we're going to point out in this Stitching the West Back Together book, is often the most biologically diverse lands in the West are privately held. Because imagine 100 years ago, the only instrument you had to get land from the government was a homestead, mm-hmm, or a desert land homestead, 160 acres, 640 acres. Here's where water comes in. If you were a rancher, what would you homestead in a semi-arid land or an arid land? You'd homestead stretches of permanent streams or rivers,
yeah,
or around springs. And typically, especially in desert areas, in arid areas, where there's water, there's an incredible amount of life. And these are the lands that are most susceptible to development. So we have to figure out some way to protect those lands, and ranching is generally a fairly low-impact way to do that. And that's one of the reasons why, as we look at large landscape conservation, we have to think in terms of not only protected areas, but areas that are privately owned, national forest and BLM lands where you have multiple use, and that all has to be managed for conservation values holistically.
Holistically, yes, that's a nice point. Well, you know, I think the mere fact you said you use that distinct term ranchers and environmentalists, and, you know, without even realizing, you say, gee, why? Of course, a good rancher is already an environmentalist, probably in ways that the general public wouldn't even know how to appreciate.
Absolutely.
His commitment to the land and to the life that's there.
Absolutely. I know a rancher out in the Altar Valley, John King, and I mean, he would kill me if I ever called him an environmentalist. But I'll certainly call him a conservationist.
There
he was the first to reintroduce fire as a natural disturbance in the valley. He's been struggling for about 30 years to get people to figure out how to restore Altar Wash. So there's an awful lot of knowledge that these people have, especially the ones that are multi-generational,
exactly,
that we really need to tap.
Well, I mentioned in the introduction, indeed, the Altar Valley Conservation Alliance. Tell us a little bit more about that specifically, this not-for-profit you're involved in.
Yeah, that's a grassroots organization of all the major ranchers in the Altar Valley, which is the big river valley, big drainage watershed west of Tucson, mm-hmm, and it also includes Aravaca Creek, which is a tributary of Altar Wash. In 1995, they all got together and created this alliance in order to promote both conservation and, you know, and working ranches.
Working ranches, okay.
And then 5 years later, they became a 501c3. And we're carrying out a lot of conservation programs on the ground. We've gotten a big grant from the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation to prepare 5 prescribed burn plans out there. We've spearheaded this multi-agency, multi-partner Altar Valley Fire Burn Plan that looks at the entire watershed and basically says where you can and can't burn, and where, if natural fires break out, where they should be allowed to burn.
So this is
a huge paradigm shift in land management that's gone on in the last 30 years or so. We're also doing a lot of gully restoration work. So what we do is work with all sorts of different partners, all of the federal agencies involved out there, Pima County, Arizona Game and Fish, environmental groups like the Sky Island Alliance, and particularly the Nature Conservancy, to carry out conservation on the ground. And kind of the essence of collaborative conservation is you focus on what unites you rather than what divides you, and then you sort of respectfully agree to disagree about the other things.
Well, this sounds like a model that could be, you know, tried and true to apply to other parts of the country.
It's happening all over the West. It's really it's becoming a remarkable social movement, because these groups have formed all over the West, among foresters as well as ranchers. And they're grassroots efforts by people who are tired of the conflict and want to get work done on the ground.
And my guess also that because they are on the ground, they're also the most knowledgeable and can put salience into the discourse that's flying around on these subjects.
Oftentimes they are, yes.
Indeed. So, Tom, how does all of this fit in? You know, your background being in anthropology, and I mentioned the various courses you teach at U of A, and now you're revising your edition of Arizona History. It looks like you've got several umbrellas that kind of fit together in this picture for you personally.
Well, you know, I'm a historical and an environmental anthropologist, and I've been interested in ranching actually since I did my dissertation down in Sonora. So I actually got interested in it south of the border. But I live in the Altar Valley, and I've gotten to know many of these ranchers. And during the bad old days when there was so much conflict, the people that I was meeting just did not jibe with the stereotypes that were being created. And so I, you know, began to get to know these people better, and then they invited me to be their community representative and join their board. But, you know, one of the things that we do as anthropologists is we try and live with the people that we study, and we try and understand what their daily reality is. What challenges do they face on a day-to-day basis? And, you know, the challenges that ranchers face now are ecological, they're economic, and they're political.
And then also the whole multi-generation, the demographic shifting at the same time.
Absolutely.
Who are we going to pass this down to, or how could we train others to appreciate it? That might not be in the family line, but that could, as you mentioned, the one couple still step in and pick up the torch and carry it to the next level.
Well, you know, people have been talking about energy security for a long, long time. And now we're just beginning to talk about food security. And, you know, unfortunately in this country, a lot of us don't know where our food comes from. And we just assume that it will always be there. It'll always be in the supermarket. But a lot of that food comes from outside our borders as well. And so there's a growing movement not only to conserve land, but also to build stronger links between local food producers and local consumers. So a lot of the ranchers I know are beginning to market part of their herd as hormone-free, grass-fed beef. And, you know, we really hope that this continues and grows, because it allows ranchers to capture more of the value of their product. And it also builds bridges between the urban people and rural people. And a lot of us, you know, city folk really no longer have those ties and understand where our food comes from. And I think the local food movement is a great way to kind of educate people and forge these, you know, very personal bonds between the ranchers or the farmers who live outside the city limits and those of us who are interested in eating healthier.
Correct.
And locally.
Well, the other side of it, too, is that you want to address what could become a lost art, and we need to step up and make sure that doesn't happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think that's, I can see that your conservancy effort is about that. Particularly, I think, the fact you've got that impassioned grassroots element, that carries with it then an absolutely unstoppable, sustainable capability on it, provided that we get it to certain hurdles in that process.
Right. And I think that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah. The national awareness of what's going on here in Arizona and these different, what's going on in the West, is this something, you know, that's a secret west of the Mississippi, or is it understood in Washington?
That's a really good question. You know, what the interesting thing that's also happening, that in addition to these local grassroots groups, there are beginning to emerge some regional kind of umbrella organizations that are trying to provide a broader voice for these issues and for these groups. The Kavira Coalition in New Mexico, the Sustainable Northwest and Rural Voices up in the Northern West. And groups like Rural Voices is very much policy oriented, and they're trying to get not only state level politicians to listen, but on the national level as well.
Good. Well, Tom, what a great education you've offered us today. Did want to make mention, of course, that you're here at the festival and you're going to be participating in a couple panels. So I encourage our listeners, if you're not already pointing your car in the direction of U of A right now, that the festival is today through 5 o'clock and also Sunday from 10 to 5. And what kind of panels are you going to be participating in, Tom?
I'm going to be one on Arizona that, mm-hmm. you know, will be sort of based on my book. And another one on kind of Latinos and Hispanics. And, right now we're going through the worst assault on Mexicans and Mexican culture in this state since what happened around statehood. And yet Hispanics are the fastest growing demographic in this state. So I think the political culture of Arizona is going to change. It's going to be a very different state, and I think a much better state 10 years from now than it is right now.
Very good. Well, we wish you the luck, and thank you for your contributions you continue to make, Dr. Thomas Sheridan at the University of Arizona, and we'll keep track of watching the progress you're making at a grassroots university and beyond level. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much,
Sarah. Very good. Have a great time at the festival.
Thanks.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.